What's going on, everybody? And welcome into the 96th episode of the Crazy One Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Stephen Gates, and this is the show where we talk about creativity, leadership, design, and a whole lot more. Now, as always, be sure to hit the subscribe button on your favorite podcast platform to get the latest episodes whenever those come out. And you know what? Do me a favor, whenever you're there, take just a couple seconds and leave a review. As always, you can listen to all the shows, get the show notes, get some Crazy One propaganda, and more content like this. Just head over to thecrazyone.com. That's the words, thecrazyandthenumber1.com. And lastly, look, if you got any questions, you just want to keep up with my ever-evolving and slightly crazy adventures, you can always follow me on Twitter or Instagram, or you can follow the show and get more content like this either on LinkedIn or Facebook. Now, you may have, I saw some of you did, I did like the, one of those short little, I don't know what, mini little advertising episode pain in the ass things. You're like, ooh, new episode. And you're like, crap, not really. But the reason why I did that, and if you didn't download that episode or if you skipped it, I get it. But what I did was last month, I decided I wanted to launch something new called Crazy One Conversations. And what these are these free talks that I'm doing with sort of like a group of about 20 people in each conversation. It's free. They're online. We use Zoom. But what I want to do is I just want to bring, honestly, just a group of strangers together to talk about a topic. And, you know, for me, it's just part of it, like I always talk about with the show, part of it is selfish. Doing the show, doing talks on stage and stuff like that are great. But it's a one-way conversation. This is me talking to you and you listening. There's not a return of information. There's not a discussion. There's not anything like that. And I wanted to change that up because I think that, you know, for me, it's feeding a little bit too much into part of the problem where we aren't talking to each other. It's feeding a little bit too much into this problem where everybody's just sort of working and learning and doing things in isolation. The problem is, though, you really can't have a conversation with a whole ton of people and have it be productive. And that was why, so I did three of these 20 people conversations. And look, I know that 60 people is pretty small. But I think, you know, for me, that's about the size to be able to have a good conversation, to let everybody contribute, and to be able to do things like that. And the thing that I said was, look, if I put up all three conversations and they all sell out, what I was going to do is this. I was going to take what we talked about, take the best insights, take the best resources, and try to capture all that as best I could and put it into an episode like this. And so I think, it, for me, as I started to think about, okay, if this is going to be a new series, what is a good first topic? And I think given the number of times every week that people reach out to me to talk about design imposter syndrome, I thought, you know what, that would probably be a really, really good place to start. So this episode is honestly probably going to be a continuation of episode 69. So 69 really covered the basics of design imposter syndrome. And I'll do a quick recap here in a second, but if you haven't listened to that episode, if imposter syndrome is something you struggle with, I would say go back and listen to that first, because that's going to cover more of the foundational things. It'll go over the five different types of imposter syndrome in more depth, but that's what it is that I want to do today, is to be able to share out, what did we talk about? To be able to share out, and again, I'm going to do it anonymously. I'm not naming names or saying anything specific or telling specific stories. But I felt like there was just some really good stuff that I hadn't thought about. There were some really good insights and some really good resources that came out of that that I wanted to share. And I think that's what my hope is. And I'm going to continue to do. So every month, I'm going to post up one of these topics, and then we're going to have three of these sort of meetings. Now, the funny part, the ironic part, is so the first topic is on design imposter syndrome. And the way that I handled it couldn't have been a better example of how and why we all suffer from it. So just again, a quick recap of imposter syndrome is that, you know, this is a psychological phenomenon where you believe that you're inadequate or you're a fraud, right? Like, despite probably a whole lot of evidence to the contrary. And it'll manifest itself in ways like if you constantly go back to change something in your work. Not because you think it can improve, but because you feel like you don't know if you've made the best choices, or you really just kind of feel like your work is a mess, or you don't trust yourself, or all these sort of things that honestly creates this inner dialogue and this connection to our work that just starts to, we start to become incredibly anxious. And we become even more anxious when we think about sharing it, whenever people are going to judge it, comment it, and God forbid they're going to not like it. And it can, look, it can come in a lot of different forms, depending on your background, your personality, the circumstances. It happens to people in all levels of their career, and it comes in a lot of different forms. And for me, it was only after I realized, like, okay, I'm really excited. I'm going to put these conversations together. I want to get people together. I want to create these tribes. Like, this is going to be so cool. But so the funny part was I said, okay, look, I'm going to do three of these. And 20 people each. And instead of thinking, okay, well, this is a popular subject, and maybe I actually know what it is that I'm doing whenever it comes to talking about this material, or, you know, I don't know what, emceeing or hosting a conversation like this. Well, no. You know, because the smart thing would have been to say, okay, great, let's put up all three of these talks at once. But no. So for me, I'm like, I don't know if anybody's going to show up. I don't know if anybody's going to care about this. I don't know if anybody's going to want to do this. So I put them up one at a time, and of course, each one sold out almost instantly, but I had to laugh at honestly, just how even, like, the quote-unquote, you know, which is such a bullshit thing, right? Like, the expert. Like you look at me and think, okay, well, he must know what it is that he's doing. No, I don't. I suffer from it just as badly as anybody else, because I was so insecure in thinking that if I do this, I don't know that there are 60 people anywhere in the world that are going to want to show up for one of these. And so next time, whenever we do this for the second time, I'm going to, you know, try to be a little braver and post them all at once. But it was just such a funny and crystal example of, again, how everybody goes through this, and that even putting together a discussion about it, I suffered from it. But, you know, if you go back and you listen to episode 69, there are really sort of five types of imposters. There's the perfectionist, the superwoman or superman, the genius, the individualist, and the expert. Now, at any given time, the thing that I'll tell you is that we all suffer from one, and honestly, probably more than one of these. And the challenge also is that as you go on through your career, which ones you suffer from are probably going to change, because you're going to change. But so we got everybody together to have these discussions, and I did it over like 2 or 3 days. And, you know, one of the big reasons why I think imposter syndrome is running rampant is because we hardly ever have discussions around these insecurities. And that, so again, that internal loop, that dialogue builds up, and it creates this imposter syndrome. I think even to me, that was sort of what I wanted to start with, that because I realized doing an episode about imposter syndrome is great. You can understand it intellectually. You can understand what it is. It doesn't give you a support system. It doesn't give you the chance to talk to anybody. It doesn't, while it is informative, I'm not actually sure that it fixed anything. So again, I think that's why for me, as I'm constantly sort of noodling through these problems and how do we make things better, I thought, you know what, that's why we want to change the format. But the biggest thing in this is that it became incredibly clear is that everyone, and like I said, even me who is putting together the event, suffers from this. It doesn't matter your level of experience or the stage of your career. So as we got these 60 people together, we had everyone from like high school students to, you know, C-level executives to professors and sort of everything in between. We had people from 10 different countries and 20 different cities inside the United States. Again, even recently, as I've been doing a little more research around this, like, you know, I started to see how this has started to become something where, you know, I've read interviews with people like Tina Fey and Meryl Streep and Ryan Reynolds and Lady Gaga and J-Lo and Serena Williams and Tom Hanks, who've all started to speak out about how they suffer from this. And I think that is sort of the foundation of, I think, one of the things that we all discovered in this conversation is that we all have it, but we all assume nobody else does, right? Like somehow, well, they have everything together. They have it figured out. They, you know, because of success, because of status, because of a position, those people don't suffer from it. And the reality is, it's just not true. I came across a fantastic quote from Maya Angelou that I thought really sort of summed it up. And she said, I've written 11 books, but each time I think, uh-oh, they're going to find out now. I've got to run a game on everybody and they're going to find me out. But again, this is one of the most respected thought and cultural leaders in the world who is, again, after 11 books, still going through this thing of kind of like, you know, look, I'm not sure if this is really going to work. But that was, I think the thing that you could see was that, you know, everybody at their core had that same insecurity, but it was finding the support group, finding the conversation. And for me, that was sort of what I hoped, but what had come back was what you heard was a lot of people said, I've never had the chance to be able to talk about something like this. I've never had a space where I could admit something like this. I've never had a place where I could be vulnerable or do things like that. And so I think then we started to look at you know, what are the other themes or what are the other things that we feel like are contributing to this problem, right? Like, where are we all getting this from? Because I think in some cases, if we're able to recognize the root of where this comes from, because we all have it built in, right? But certain things are going to feed it. Certain things are going to make it worse and exacerbate it and build it up more. And some interesting themes, I think, emerged here. The first one, which I hadn't really thought about, but whenever somebody brought it up, it made a tremendous amount of sense, is just how broken and out of whack a lot of job descriptions are. Because the thing is that in many cases, you know, you get these wild job descriptions that seem to ask for every skill in the world, every application in the world, every, you know, again, like some of the warning signs, I think, that you can look for is if you start to see words like ninja, unicorn, magic, fast pace, rock star, wear multiple hats, guru, must know, and then an insane list of like shit or applications or stuff like that, right? These are those sort of things where I think in many cases, these are HR teams or these are creative leaders or just teams in general who are just trying to throw this big wide net. I think it's the inverse of a lot of times when I look at portfolios, my feedback will be, look, I don't begin to have a sense of who you are. You become so generic and so diluted. I don't understand what you stand for. I think teams suffer from it in the same way. And this is the way, one of the ways it manifests itself is in these just broken, ridiculous, insane job descriptions. And I think especially people who were more at the beginning of their career seem to be much more susceptible to this because they would read these just, you know, lengthy, insane things and go, look, I don't measure up. I don't know all of this. How on earth could I have this sort of experience, but you want a junior designer who knows 16, you know, different applications? So I think, you know, out of this, there are a couple things that were, I think, really important themes that we revisited a few times in all the conversations. One is, and I think this can be extremely difficult, but it's the recognition that we can't or shouldn't have our value set by other people. Because the reality is if you're not right for that job, that's fine. Or again, even if you want to apply for it, the best jobs you would hope are people who want your skill set. They want you for you. They want you for what it is you know, not for you to become some caricature of yourself and become somebody else that you're not. And in many cases, especially as you go through that process, it's so tempting because you're asked to be so vulnerable. You're asked to be so raw and to kind of go through this process that is about judgment and acceptance and a lot of things that will really fire up your imposter syndrome. But the other part of that is, and it's interesting, I think for the few, for some of us who were in these conversations, who probably were a little bit further on in our career, we start to also start to recognize that I think in your career, in your life, in a lot of things, there seems to be this almost like invisible script that we feel like we should be following, right? Like you should graduate high school, you should graduate from college, you go out and you get a job, you get married, you have 2.5 kids, you get a car and a dog in the suburbs. And if you deviate from that script at all in your life, then all of a sudden you're getting judged and, you know, asked all these weird questions like, my wife and I don't have kids. It is amazing to me how people will kind of, you know, like it starts when we first got married and it's like, oh, what are you going to have kids? And it's like, oh, we don't think we really want to. It's like, oh, uncomfortable silence. And as it goes a little further on, and I think they get a little bit bolder, they'd be like, oh, is something wrong? Can you not have kids? It's like, no, we can. We just don't feel like that's for us. We feel like we're too selfish. To the point where as it started to get to an extreme, and just because of my insanely sarcastic humor sometimes, I would look at a few of our friends and just say, hey, if we're talking about next big life stages and we're going to grill each other on that, when are you going to die? Because that seems to be the next life stage in the script for you. And then the questions about the kids tend to stop. But that's the thing, right? And it's the same thing in your career, is there seems to be this invisible script that to advance, you have to go into leadership. You can't become an individual contributor. To advance, you have to do these certain things. Yet I think whenever those of us who are a little bit further on in my career, and I will openly talk about this, my career path makes zero damn sense, right? Because I went from working for my father to going to college to being in advertising to being in a hotel company, a bank, and now like a SaaS software company. Nobody looks at that and says, yes, that's the script to be successful, right? It's only in hindsight. And I think that's the thing, right? Like success and genius, I think, are only concepts that exist in hindsight. In the moment, you're supposed to be following this invisible script, but rarely in doing that do you find any success. Because, again, it's this sort of generic expectation. But nonetheless, that invisible script will yield a huge amount of pressure on people because you feel like that's what everybody else is trying to live up to, so you should too. But that's the thing, is that it's not real. And, you know, again, whenever we're asking other or looking to others to set our value, and whenever we're looking to others to be able to basically try to stand out by being like everyone else, it's becomes fairly easy to see when you look at it in that light why that sort of path doesn't become successful, but also why it generates the amount of imposter syndrome that it does, because we're chasing these invisible, like, caricaturesque standards that shouldn't really exist. Now, I think because a part of this is that the problem is also exacerbated because, look, we're in the moment, and I've said for the better part of a decade, you know, as creatives, we have the ability to affect business in ways we've not seen since the last Industrial Revolution. You know, so we are being asked to be more creative. We are being asked to be more vulnerable. We're being asked to try to be more innovative and to reach out to other teams and to work with other people. Yet, the environment in which that work is supposed to exist has not evolved one bit. Because pretty much no company that I work with, and again, I travel around and talk and work with a lot, I have found two, where they will deliberately create space to be able to discuss, teach, deal with, support any sort of thought around imposter syndrome. Because for everybody else, it's just like, show up, do your work, be awesome, be happy. And again, you know, everything you do should be wonderful. And so for so many of us, you tend to parade around with this mask that if somehow you are vulnerable, if somehow if you're realistic, you know, again, you'll be deemed as divisive or emotional or, like, again, like all these other ridiculous things. Because for companies, and again, going back to the episode on trust, they like practical trust. They like, come in, do your job, be on time, do what we tell you to, and that's it. The emotional side of it, that sort of emotional trust, that becomes much, much more difficult because it requires more of a human-centered approach. It requires you to do things differently. But ultimately, I think that's sort of the feedback loop that they're struggling with right now, is that lack of trust in companies and in leadership is where a lot of people are struggling. This is why we're seeing the rise of the gig economy, of people who just have said, look, I don't trust that companies have my best interest in mind anymore, and so I want to do my own thing because the only person I trust is me. You'll see people who move around people are moving every 2 years because they don't trust their leadership. They don't trust their company. They don't feel like they're getting what they need out of that. And that's the thing, is that, you know, there is very little structure or support for these sort of conversations. And again, you know, we talk to people in these conversations who were from the absolute biggest brands in the world to, again, people who were an individual creative in a very small town, you know, again, sort of well off the beaten path. But the stories seem to be the same. And the other thing is that often, I think the thing that I very much recognize in my career, but I think it also came out in these conversations, is that in many cases, I don't think that we understand that as you go on in your career, as you become more senior, as you become more successful, whatever it is, in many cases, I think the imposter syndrome gets worse. Because in many cases, you know, look, if I'm a leader, I can't go talk to my team about what I'm struggling with or to be vulnerable or to tell them I feel like I'm a fraud. Who wants to follow that person? Where it's like, yeah, I'm coming in to lead the team and I feel like a fraud. We just don't have constructs that allow that conversation to happen. The same way, in many cases, as a leader, you can't go to your boss and say, hey, look, I really feel like I'm not sure what I'm really doing. I'm really insecure about something. Because again, you're going to be viewed as ineffective and weak because you need to, again, be in this sort of like alpha movie, you know, bravado, chest beating sort of thing is a concept of leadership. But then also, I think we will tend to isolate ourselves. This is why I did the episode around needing a support system, was because as you grow, you've achieved that position you've worked for. So you tend to hustle and network less because you're a little bit higher up on the hill. You aren't quite as hungry for them as what it was before. So just even your motivation and the way you will attack problems changes so that you tend to put yourself into isolation more. But then I think this is, again, why it becomes exponentially worse, because as you are looked at as a leader, as you're looked at as the person who's supposed to have the answers, as you're looked at the person who, again, needs to be out in front, yet at that same point, you have probably more anxiety because, you know, if you came into the industry as a designer and you're now leading, completely different skill set, you probably did not have anybody who mentored you on what that is, so you're just sort of figuring out as you go along. The people in your support system is smaller than maybe it's ever been in your career. So again, there are forces that align to these sort of things. And I think, you know, this is a topic I really wanted to get into because, again, for the design leaders I talk to, about ballpark, 70% are in therapy. And I think this is why. Because I think, you know, we continue, the expectations grow, the support system diminishes, but that nagging voice actually only gets louder because the thing that got me into the industry, my talent, right? Like my design talent is now not what I am using every day to be successful. I need to do something different to be a leader. So that those things really sort of coalesce into this perfect storm around imposter syndrome that I think makes it disproportionately worse in many cases for leaders. And I've never heard anybody talk about this. This was sort of the first time I heard a really open and raw conversation in a more open forum. I have this conversation a lot one-on-one, but never in a form like this. But I think these are the sort of things out of the discussion that we feel like are kind of like the factors that are affecting this, that are sort of causing this explosion, this rampant, I don't know what, this rampant moment where we all have such amazing opportunity, but such amazing insecurity. And so, again, like most times whenever I do this, understanding the factors that lead to it are good, but I think also really wanting to capture what are the things that people were doing? What are the things that they're doing to fight it? What were the things they would tell themselves? Or those sort of different techniques, advice, insights, whatever those were that were working for them? And there were some really great ones that I'd never thought of. There's actually a number of things that I've started doing personally because I thought, you know what, that's a really good idea and I haven't thought about that. And that's why I said, is I think that's the point of all this, is just how do we create spaces to be vulnerable and to learn and to not put on, again, that mask and that charade. But some of the best advice, I think, came from a lot of different places. You know, it was the first off just to sort of what we've already talked about, which was to know and acknowledge that this sort of feeling and that sort of insecurity is normal, that we all have it. That, you know, it doesn't make you different or less, or you're not alone in that. That everybody who we talk to, everybody who I've ever been around, you know, goes through this. There is small solace that is taken in that, I know, right? Because you can, it's the same thing where it's like, you know, if you're having a bad day and somebody is like, well, you know, somebody in some other part of the world has it so much worse than you. It's like, yeah, look, there's always somebody who has it worse. But that I take very little comfort or solace in the fact that it could be worse. But I think it is that reminder that, again, it's not that it could be worse, but it is something that everyone is going through. I think a lot of it, and this is something that I've changed about myself over the last couple of years, is to look at the lens in which you also look at yourself and to remind yourself of all the things you've actually accomplished. I suffered from this thing where what I would do is I would always focus on what I hadn't done. I would focus on where I came up short. And I started to realize it was a very destructive mindset for me to be in because all I would see is what I hadn't done. And so even just that simple shift of just saying, look, this is who I am. This is what it is that I've done. This is what it is I'm good at. It really led me to honestly just sort of being able to show up as myself much more, to be much more accepting of myself, to be much more forgiving of myself, as opposed to so that it wasn't that constant mindset of it wasn't good enough. Look, I didn't lose the hustle. I haven't lost the hunger. I haven't lost the talent to be able to do what it is that I do. It's just how do I show up and support myself? How do I understand and take confidence in what I do? That I just needed to make that mindset because I really realized that I was just becoming self-destructive by constantly focusing on the negative. But it's also to the fact that, you know, look, this is a two-part problem. There's an inner monologue that goes on here. But I think the other thing is that in the moments, whenever you have done something well, whenever somebody does want to give you praise, it's to hear and accept the good things. Because I think too often we blow off compliments because we think it's like polite small talk or that it isn't sincere or that, you know, somebody's just saying it, right? Because it's very easy to rationalize and sort of let that internal dialogue, that internal little demon win and just sort of brush it off. But I think that there are those moments and it is one of the most, I don't know what, it's the piece of advice that I think has affected me the most over the course of my career, and it was such a little thing. One of the best people I ever worked with was the head of digital whenever I was at Starwood, and it was at one of the first times that we did any work with Apple, right? And it was so cool, it was so different, but I remember, you know, for myself and for the gentleman who sort of ran the engineering with me, he just sort of stopped us at one of these moments and put his arm around me before we were going to set off on one of our adventures with them. And he said, look, I just want you to make sure that you take time and remember this. You know, remember what this felt like. Remember how good this was. Remember, you know, all the things that got us here, and to hold on to that. Because whenever it gets hard, whenever we have to struggle, these are the moments and these are the memories we're going to want, because it's just so easy to miss them. Because in those moments, you concentrate on how it could have been better or whatever it was. And just that little thing of, as I've gone through my life, whenever I'm in one of those moments that it is doing something cool or it is something special, to just stop and recognize it, to give yourself the moment to be proud of yourself and to be able to do that. Because without it, I realized how many of those moments I had missed out on in my career because I was so focused on, again, how it could have been better. But to accept those good things. Another thing that somebody brought up that I thought was a really good idea was that, again, it really helps your imposter syndrome to teach, because it helps you see and appreciate just how much you've learned and accomplished. And teaching could be helping somebody out on LinkedIn. It could be teaching a class. It could be going to a meetup. It can come in a lot of different forms. It doesn't mean that it needs to be a big, you know, formal, you go to a university. You can teach and help and do things in a lot of different ways if you're able to sort of be willing to put yourself out there. And that, again, I think that probably is one of the reasons why, even for me, without understanding it, you know, how the public speaking and doing this podcast has helped me fight my imposter syndrome, because, you know, I think it's made it better and worse, because in some ways I feel like, you know, you are able to understand that you do understand certain things and you're able to share it, but then it makes it a little bit worse, because then you also feel like you should be the expert from this stuff and you should not be suffering from it the way that you do. But I still think at the end of the day, it really does help a lot. Another big part of it that I think was a recurring theme of, to get people who will keep you honest, who will be honest with you, and who you can check in with, right? This goes back to, again, the episode I did around a support system, but how isolation is really the enemy for all of us. That getting on our own head, not having somebody to talk to, not having a place to have these conversations can become really self-destructive, because we just wind ourselves up. Because that was one of the things that I heard time and time again as people went through this, was how often they had created a narrative for what they thought might happen. Not that it actually did happen, but how they thought somebody would judge them, how they thought somebody would think about them, how they thought all these things were going to happen, whenever they actually had no real idea if that was going to be the case or not. And in some cases it wasn't, but the vast majority of the times it was not, and that we were stopping ourselves because of this narrative that we had created. And that by, again, doing this and having people who can support us, to push us, to be honest with us, that it allows us to overcome a lot of those narratives and to be based a bit more in reality. And to what I said before about, you know, just stopping to appreciate it, I think, you know, there definitely was a theme about sort of being generous to your creative self, of, you know, doing side projects or having hobbies, or if you're really stressed out, like take a mental health day, go out and have a good meal and go to a museum, do something to be able to understand your creativity and your mentality is fragile. That, again, a lot of these insecurities are going to creep in, and that sometimes, at least for me, I know that's the case. I can be my most creative and I can be my most confident whenever I actually step away from something to get some perspective on it, to get a little space from it, to see the forest for the trees and not be so immersed in what's going on. But a lot of this is, and I think this is where I'll give credit to every single person that attended. And I think it's for everybody that's listened to this show who's tried to push themselves to do something different, is that for a lot of this stuff, it is about your willingness to be vulnerable. In this case, like I said, I applaud this group of 60 people who came together as strangers and quickly, you know, came through to be astonishingly honest, astonishingly vulnerable, to tell stories about what they had been through, what they had learned, to a group of complete strangers. And again, I think whenever I put this together, that was what I had hoped this would be. It's what I'd seen it happen in other places. But often there was some connection there, right? Like I would do a dinner in a city, so maybe there was a locality. Maybe it was the physicality of actually being there. I wasn't sure if this was going to work. But that willingness to put yourself out there and to be honest and vulnerable about what that is. That's why I said, for everybody who participated in this, for everybody who writes me that said that they've tried to push themselves to do something different, it's just, you guys are my fucking heroes. Like, because it's just that ability to do that I think makes all the difference in the world. Another big theme that came out of this, which again is something that I've now started doing, has been meditation. This was a big theme across all the conversations with a number of people who brought up saying that they had started meditation. Some of them used apps. Some of them just would sit quietly and kind of be bored or think. But it was, again, giving yourself that time to be quiet, to be thoughtful, to be somebody who can be reflective of these things. That a lot of the people who felt like they were making progress against this seemed to be a big theme that they came back to again and again, was that ability to find some stillness and a little bit of quiet. And as a leader, I think, you know, the other thing that definitely came out of a lot of this is that if you lead a team, that it is important for you to think about how do you create a space for imposter syndrome to be discussed, not to be judged, not to be solved, again, not to sort of create these unrealistic expectations. Because again, the thing that I've learned in teaching a lot of teams and working with a lot of different people, it isn't about telling people what to do or giving them the answers. It's about creating a space to have these discussions, to take the power and the fear out of a topic like this, to let people have the revelations of what they're going through and to find their tribe of people who can support them. But as a leader, it's about how do you create the space for that to happen? How do you create the entrance into the conversation? How do you put the information out there so that people can start to crystallize and understand what it is they're going through? Many of the talks that I do at a lot of different companies, and I'll tell them, right, it's not about giving them answers. It's about hopefully crystallizing some of the things that have been in front of them, but maybe they haven't recognized. And then it's about creating a space for them to be able to go back and have the discussion now with the recognition of what is actually driving the behavior and some of the issues they're dealing with, to be able to start to have conversations about that and to bring transparency to it. Now, one of the exercises that I've done, and again, I will post this in the show notes, is to create what really looks like a spider chart. So it's like a circle that has all five of the little imposters kind of dotted around the outside of it. Now, what I'll often do for this to be really effective is that I'll ask somebody to fill it out for themselves. What do you think you suffer from? And it would sort of be like a blob chart, right? Like some are a little bit bigger, some are a little bit smaller, but you just sort of make like this organic shape. And then the other thing that I'll do is that then I'll ask their boss or their team or their peers to fill one out as well on their behalf. Because what I want to do is I want to be able to sit down and understand that whenever it comes to any of these challenges, we are almost always our own biggest blind spot. Because what you'll see is that, look, maybe you beat yourself up too much about something. Maybe you don't give yourself enough credit for something. Maybe you have it in places that you didn't even know about. But what I'm really wanting to do is to be able to try to raise people's self-awareness. Because if the chart that you make and the chart that your peers or boss makes are extremely close, your self-awareness is probably actually pretty good. But if they're extremely far apart, then there's probably a conversation that needs to happen and a little bit of introspection about what is the difference between the way you view yourself and the way everybody else views you. Because again, there is something in that. And we can never truly see ourselves. Because again, of cognitive bias, because of imposter syndrome, because of so many different things, the way that we are to the world and the way that we think we are can be different. It can be distorted. And that, again, trying to get the understanding of that and get the dual perspective of it, so many times when I work with leaders and teams, looking at these two points and being able to compare them creates such amazing breakthroughs and insights. And so again, I'll post that. It's just a simple 8.5 by 11 piece of paper. You can print it out and again, have people do it. It's an exercise that you can do that I've found to be incredibly fruitful because again, it allows you to sort of give shape to it and to discuss it. It's not about judgment. It's not about, again, doing anything else, but just simply having a conversation saying, look, I think I really struggle with this. And maybe hearing your peers say, you know what, look, I think you're actually really fantastic at that. Or, you know what, I didn't know you were struggling with that. And you know what, I've been able to sort of make a breakthrough there. So let me help you. Let me give you some advice. Let me be the person you can then be part of your support system. But again, it creates that so critical space for that conversation to happen. Now, there are two other things that I'm going to put in the show notes as well. One was a book that actually came up twice that I have not had the chance to read yet, so I will recommend it with the asterisk. It's called The Proximity Principle, the proven strategy that will lead that will lead to a career you love. And the other one was one of the attendees created what I thought was an absolutely fantastic Google Doc that I'll put up there to share, which was an incredibly, really rich and thorough collection of great resources around imposter syndrome, around articles, around books, around a number of different things. And like I said, I have been able to try to make it through most of them. This is not something that I put together, but I felt like it was a really good resource. But that's the thing, right? Is that for me, it was these conversations were so fantastic. And I think if they showed nothing else, it's that we all struggle with this. So we aren't alone in having this sort of problem, right? And this is, it's only really a problem if you don't work at it. Confidence is going to come and go, right? But I think if you believe you can be a great creative, if you're willing to do the work, to not give up, to be, you know, self-analytical, not self-critical, self-analytical, and understand that imposter syndrome is always going to be there, but to recognize it and to see it for what it is, to not give it the power that you had in the past, it's going to be less and less a part of your life, and you're going to have more and more of the tools that you need to be able to fight it. But so I'd also be curious that, you know, are there things in listening to this that you have tried, that you have done, that there are things, you know, that you struggled with and overcome as it comes to this? It could be books, could be resources, could be anything like that. Like, if you've got that stuff, reach out to me, because I'd love to be able to compile that, put that into an article for Medium or LinkedIn or something, to be able to kind of start to compile on the back of these conversations these sort of resource kits that we can use to be able to put together, you know, this really good information of recommended books and reading, so that we all can come together, make it a two-way dialogue, make it a way we can support each other and support people who you may never even meet, support people you may never even know, but know that you're going to have an impact on them. Because I think that to me is why I'm sort of trying to broaden the focus of the show, why I'm trying to do these new things, is to mix up the format, is to make sure that again, we can share, and this is a two-way conversation. Because I think whenever we do that, that's when we make such incredible growth. That's when we make such incredible strides, whenever we're there for each other. Because I think that, to me, has been the thing that has been so motivating, empowering, humbling, has been to be able to travel around and talk to all these different people, to do this show and to hear about, again, how it's impacted people who I've never met. But again, to be able to try to broaden that power so it's not just something that I'm able to experience, we all can. So if you've got those things, you've got those insights, those stories, whatever that is, look, reach out to me, send it to me on, you know, LinkedIn, send it on Twitter, send it on, you know, don't do Instagram. You can go to my site, right? Like, email me through there. Just find a way, right? Like, reach out with whatever that is, because I'd love to be able to talk to you and be able to kind of understand what you're going through that. So next month we're going to be kicking off three new conversations next month. It looks like, from the poll that I did online, they're going to be focused on the ROI of design. Again, one of the other big topics that comes up a lot is, how do we actually measure the impact of design and creativity on business? So that's what we're going to focus on next month, and probably within about another week or so, if you're listening to the show in real time, those dates are going to go up. Again, I try to spread them out well enough. Again, knowing that we have people who tune in from all over the world, I want to try to find spots that work for the West Coast, the East Coast, the United States, Europe. We have people into Africa, Asia, and other places like that. So again, you're not hopefully having to get up at, like, somebody in Greece, I think, got up at like 1 a.m. to be a part of the call. Try not to have that happen again. But like I said, it was an incredibly cool thing, and I'm definitely going to keep rolling on with this. And like I said, it's totally free. Just go in, grab a ticket, show up for it. They've really been great. But hey, hopefully this is useful. If it is, as always, subscribe to the podcast, leave a review. You can find out more about this show. And like I said, get the show notes for all the stuff that I've talked about and all these different resources. Just hit up thecrazyone.com. It's thecrazyandthenumber1.com. Follow me on social media. You get updates, new content, ask questions. You can follow the show on LinkedIn or Facebook. It's on both of those now. As always, everybody down in legal wants me to remind you that the views here are just my own. They don't represent any of my current or former employers. And that finally, I say it every time because I mean it every time, but thank you for your time. I know that time is truly the only real luxury any of us have. I was incredibly humbled you want to spend any of it listening to me. So hey, go out, take on that imposter syndrome, share what it is you're doing with me, so again, we can start to put together these great resources. And as always, stay crazy.